Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Mr. Lewis darkens the door of surveillance for a sane and detailed conversation. He is joined by Brad Katsuyama of IEX. Brad, wonderful to have you here as well. Did you expect the tumult? I mean, I know you did the 60 Minutes thing and that, but the follow-on uproar of Wall Street, did you know that was coming?
You know, I was talking to my wife about this last night because it's so much.
Well, she's a media type, right? Let's be honest.
But she's also smart. I wanted her to remind me what I was saying I thought would happen. And she said, you thought there was going to be a firestorm. So this is what you thought was going to happen. But I don't remember feeling that. I didn't expect this. I mean, the level of the noise is incredible. And that really the only thing I've experienced like this in my publishing life is when Moneyball came out and the baseball war went
the crazy. Online baseball people thought
this
you were an idiot.
This is the Wall Street, all of Wall Street instead of
I want to discuss baseball. Some really well-written stuff, and in it they give you credit here and there. They take some shots at you. Cliff Asness is one of the smartest math guys I know, AQR. And here's something that he wrote in the Wall Street Journal. Matt Levine picked this up as well at Bloomberg View. Well, sorry, but prices responding quickly and traders not being able to buy or sell a ton without the market moving is what is supposed to happen. An efficient market shouldn't be mistaken for an unfair one. I want Michael Lewis to define unfair in this modern Wall Street world.
Let's have Brad have a shot at it.
You want to take it, Brad?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I'll have a shot at it.
I'm fascinated by what fair and unfair is.
I think the clip, what was just said, is I think it's perfectly accurate. I mean, there will be fast traders. Computers will be the only thing that can possibly exploit certain or profit from certain arbitrage opportunities that are natural. If you're trading an ETF against the underlying stocks, only a computer can possibly profit from that arbitrage. But there's nothing wrong with that.
Have we arbitraged away what you wrote about in Flash Boys? Is your book old news?
No, I don't think so. He said there are unnecessary. Sort of financial intermediation described in the book that he just picked up in the last month or two. So the answer is no. I mean, the market structure itself has created inefficiencies. Not just inefficiencies that go away when people come in and arbitrage it. It's permanent inefficiencies. It's structural inefficiency, which is different from like the price of Chevron getting out of line with the price of oil. That's not the nature of this. The nature of this is sort of like the plumbing is broken and people are sucking on the pipes.
But I think as I read the book, Michael, I sensed a key distinction that you make between, on the one hand, traders who trade frequently and faster than others versus companies, brokers that are effectively buying business and potentially front running orders. Isn't that true that you see a distinction there between speed and front running?
Well, the difference in speed enables the front running. So, and the question is who is benefiting from the front running? And I think if you back away from this ecosystem that's been created in the stock market, the way it looks is a high frequency trade.
But here's the thing, and again, this is the distinction.
I'm not sure I understand the question you're asking.
Well, okay, so let's say one broker simply has put in thicker cables, and in theory that grants faster access. If that person doesn't actually know what the order is, he or she isn't front running, he or she is just faster, right?
You want to try to answer? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Yeah, I'm not. I think the best point to make is that people will use computers to trade, and there are a lot of legitimate reasons why computers are needed to trade and arbitrage certain things. But people also, I mean, people have always looked to game the market.
Right.
People also use computers to scalp. And I think there's a very clear distinction between using computers to trade and using computers to scalp.
Okay, with that distinction, let's continue. Scarlett, jump into something else.
Well, Michael, I want you to explain to Wall Street guys why you chose to write a book through the lens of a trader at a third-tier bank. No disrespect to
what?
Brad.
No, that's unfair.
Your former employer.
Top 10.
I mean, this is what people say in the industry. Versus someone, say, at a big investment bank with a successful dark pool or a high-flying, high-frequency trading firm. I mean, by not going to the source of the action, these people would say that you're not telling the whole story, that maybe the story's discredited.
So there are two answers to this question. The first is, I think it's a little unfair to describe RBC as a third-tier bank.
Maybe not first-tier, then.
Not in Canada.
No, in Canada,
it's first-tier.
So this is what's so interesting about the story. Brad Katsuyama starts to see, he's trading in the equity markets in 2000, he starts to see changes in the stock market. He goes on a basically 5-year investigation to understand how the stock market works. And after a couple of years, finds himself described by investors, the biggest investors in the world, to me, as the world's expert on how the stock market works. Who's the only one from Wall Street who's willing to describe to him.
Yeah, hold on. You know, this is a distinction. Scarlett, you know, has an angle here of the big banks versus the little banks. I happen to agree with you that the distinguishing thing between the 4 or 5 major banks and the other banks isn't as wide as
fair. But Brad, where was Goldman Sachs? Where was Morgan Stanley? Where was Credit Suisse and all this? How come they didn't make
the
same discovery?
And they were all nuanced, is what I thought. Credit Suisse said no, right?
I'm sorry, but he educated Goldman Sachs. So well, who cares where they come from?
Why didn't they see the same thing?
I think part of it is that I was in the right place at the right time. You know, electronic trading had evolved, and I think that. In 2009, after the financial crisis, I was sitting at RBC charged with building an electronic trading business. People were looking to get out of banks. People were getting, you know, fired from banks. And here RBC was in a position of strength, being able to hire. We assembled a massive team and started to put the pieces of the puzzle together. I mean, there's no way in the world I could have ever solved this myself.
Do you think you did anything wrong?
Wrong? No, I think each time you get information, you have a decision to make, what to do with the information. I think along the way, we've just kept choosing a path that I think has led us, you know, to being where we are right now. But, you know, people at RBC or people at IEX or even, you know, our closest clients, buy-side firms, they've all been a part of educating and discovering things. And collectively, I think we've just come together to solve this issue.
Michael Lewis.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.